I don't know him, Peter shouted, feeling the raw, shredding fear in the pit of his stomach. Three times he shrieked out his denials on the darkest Thursday night in human history. Looking back now, how does Peter feel about that night of failure?
Welcome to the Voice of Prophecy. This is Lonnie Melashenko. Join us today as we search for ways to make this a better world and prepare for the world to come.
Hello, everyone. This is Kenneth Richards. Today, Lonnie and our studio guest take us back 2,000 years to the night when Jesus Christ was both betrayed and denied. We have a special gift for you in a few moments, so do stay tuned at the close. First, here's our host, Lonnie Melashenko.
Thanks, Ken. Hello, everyone, and welcome again to our very unusual Voice of Prophecy broadcast. We have a guest today who certainly isn't used to radio broadcasting, but in his time, he surely envisioned a day when the gospel message of Jesus would beam all around the world. We're talking about the one and only Apostle Peter. Simon Peter, right here in our studio with us today. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Lonnie. It's a wonderful blessing to be here with you and with all your listeners.
Now, Peter, the world of your day was much smaller, wasn't it?
Yes, but we did certainly have a commitment to take the story of Jesus Christ everywhere there were human beings able to listen.
You had some incredible mission trips, didn't you?
Oh, yes, sir, I did.
Now, more on that tomorrow for those of you joining us. But today, Peter, we have to open up the pages to one of the most wrenching human stories in all the Bible. And it is your story, isn't it?
The Thursday night.
That's right, the Thursday night. How you betrayed Jesus those three times. How in the world did something like this happen to you?
Well, you know, I guess what I did was probably the worst sin ever committed in the history of the human race. Three times in a row, I told people I'd never heard of this man, Jesus Christ. And that's after Jesus had predicted what I'd do, and I'd said to him, never, never, Lord, not in a million years.
Peter, would you take us through the whole experience? Do you mind? I know how painful this is for you.
No, it's a story that's been told many times, and I've probably told it more times than anybody, because what I did is what every man, every woman, every child is tempted to do. To deny Christ is the great sin, the great, horrible evil that lurks in every single human heart.
Well, tell us how it happened.
Well, we were having that supper with Jesus in the upper room. Now, for us, this was the Passover meal, the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. This happened on the 14th of Nisan, in what today we'd call March or April. It was after sundown, which was required by Jewish law.
The first part of the seven-day feast.
Correct. Of course, Christians now call this the Lord's Supper.
Right.
Anyway, Christ had just told us again that he was going to be crucified. If you read this story in Matthew 26, at the beginning of the chapter, he said he was going to be crucified. And here in the upper room, he began to say it again.
That he was going to be killed.
That's right. And even then, we simply didn't believe him.
Now, why were the 12 of you so intent on blocking this out? You were less than 24 hours away from his death, and you disciples still didn't accept this as being a reality.
Well, you know, Lonnie, as you and I have discussed all week long, our minds were someplace else. We were thinking about an earthly kingdom and how we could maneuver Jesus onto a throne of some kind right there in Jerusalem. So when he talked about things like crucifixions, we just thought that was a lot of Messiah talk, melodrama, and we dismissed it every time.
Plus, weren't you all kind of angling for position among yourselves? Didn't that keep you from focusing on what Christ was saying?
Well, you know, I guess I need to back up a little bit. Right when we got to that upper room for our feast, something happened that really points up what our problem was.
Tell us about it.
Well, you see, always at a feast like that, there would be a servant to come in and wash our feet. There'd be water, towels, everything provided. Well, no servant. It was just like the 13 of us. And in the frame of mind I was in, and the other men too, apparently, I wasn't about to do a servant's job. From the point of view of grabbing that top spot in the kingdom, this was no time to put on a towel and start doing grunt work. I think that's how you'd say it now, a dirty job. You act like a servant, and the others soon decide you are one.
And then Jesus himself.
Oh, Jesus himself put on the towel and came around and washed our feet. Jesus did it.
That must have been a quiet kind of moment.
Oh, we were red in the face. I mean, for Jesus to do the servant's job, I know I was ashamed.
What did he say to you when he washed your feet?
Well, actually, I said to him, Jesus, never. You're not going to wash my feet. But he looked right at me and said, if I don't, you can't have any part of me or of my kingdom. Something like that. In other words, I had to get what he was showing us right there, or it was all over for me. So I said, well, wash everything then. But he didn't. He just said, no, this is enough.
You know, Peter, in my Adventist denomination, we celebrate both the Lord's Supper and this ceremony of washing each other's feet. We call it the Ordinance of Humility.
Oh, really?
But I imagine as we take off our expensive shoes and socks and wash each other's feet there in our comfortable church sanctuaries, it's a far cry from the powerful emotional tension of the moment you experience, the stark truth Jesus showed you in that one act. It was life or death that you understand this.
Well, we were right there. I saw it happen.
But what happened next?
Well, it's all such a wretched, painful thing that sometimes I almost block it out. Who said what and everything. But, of course, it's all written down. Jesus knew that Judas was going to betray him. But the way he handled that, and then Judas leaving, we didn't really understand that even. And then he talked about how that very night we all were going to leave him. The sheep of the flock will be scattered, he said. And everybody said, oh, no, Lord, not us. We'll never leave you. And I probably said it louder than any of them. I remember saying something like, these men may leave you, Lord, but I never will. Jesus, I promise you can count on me.
And then he said...
Oh, that was the big moment. He looked right at me and said, Peter, I'm telling you the truth. This very night, tonight, you will betray me three times. And then something about before the rooster crows.
Which you didn't believe.
Well, it made no sense. We weren't going anywhere. Why would I be where I'd want to deny Jesus? Why would I be where there'd be a rooster? Plus, I knew I wouldn't do such a thing. I was a strong man. I was the biggest disciple, the bravest one. I mean, that much is true, and all the men knew it.
How did Jesus know what you were going to do? How did he know that?
Well, you know, Lonnie, I don't know that. He knew he'd be crucified, obviously, but that was clearly revealed in prophecy. He wasn't one to go around making predictions about the future just because he was the Son of God. So I don't know if my doing that, still in the future, was revealed to him, or if he just knew me. I thought I knew him, but he sure knew me a lot more. He knew what was in my heart.
What do you think was in your heart? You did love Jesus. You've said that all week.
Oh, yes, I did love him, but I was still afraid. What happened that night was terrifying. It looked like Jesus was going to die, and of course the 11 of us would be next, and I want to tell you something. It's one thing to say real big, oh Lord, I'll die for you. But all of a sudden, when you think you really are going to die for him, it's a whole different story.
But out in Gethsemane, you were strong, cutting off that man's ear and everything.
Oh yes, that's true. And I think I wasn't so much afraid of a good fight, or even of dying. That wasn't the worst of it. The thing I was most afraid of was ridicule. I couldn't stand that, and there'd been a fair amount of it while I was with Jesus.
Well, Peter, that's probably a lesson for our listeners today. We think about the prophecies of Revelation and its predictions of persecution in the future, and maybe we think of imprisonment and death, and we're determined to be strong. What if it's ridicule instead? I mean, what if it's teasing or scorn or being made to look ridiculous? A lot of us are most frightened of that.
Anyway, after Jesus was arrested, and John and I followed him to the courtyard, that's when it happened. Three times in a row, people came up to me and said, hey, you're one of them too.
And you basically said, well, you denied it.
I denied it. I don't know him. I never heard him. What are you talking about? And the third time, I could tell they knew. They didn't believe me. And I was so desperate, so panicked by then that I just started swearing. I used every profane word I'd ever heard in my life, hoping that would throw them off my track.
And right then, you saw Jesus'
right
face.
Then, right then. He looked right at me, and I remembered what I'd said before, and it just killed me. Looking at Jesus' face, he loved me so much, even in that look.
Not angry?
No, not angry. Disappointed. And, of course, he was crushed by everything. All of us leaving, Judas coming up, kissing him. It was terrible. The whole thing, the whole night, was right there written on his face. But he wasn't angry.
What did that do to you?
You know, Lonnie, my heart was broken. I know what a common expression that is, but that's what happened to me. I just went running out of there crying like a newborn baby, just crying. I ended up clear back at Gethsemane, and I just fell down on the ground crying. I wished I was dead. Right there, I wished I was dead.
Well, we're completely out of time here, Peter, but skip ahead to Sunday. Jesus is resurrected, and in his own special way, he lets you know that he'd already forgiven you. Tell us about that.
Well, when Mary Magdalene and the others went to the tomb on Sunday, the angel said to them, "Don't be alarmed. You're looking for Jesus who has risen from the dead." And then they said this, "Go tell the disciples and Peter."
And to you, that was a message from Jesus himself.
Oh, yes. Tell the disciples and Peter. I knew then that Jesus had forgiven me already.
It's an unbelievable story, isn't it?
Except that it happened to me.
That was really your turning point, wasn't it, Simon Peter? You were different from that Thursday night on.
By the grace of God, Lonnie.
Our guest, the Apostle Simon Peter, broken and reborn disciple of the risen Savior, Jesus Christ.
Yes, a big thank you to Peter for being with us today, and to our longtime friend, Mr. Bob Edwards, for playing the part so convincingly. Friend, we'd like to send you a gift. It's a beautiful new copy of the magazine Peace Above the Storm. This is an attractive rendition of the classic Christian book Steps to Christ by E.G. White. For your free copy, write The Voice of Prophecy, Box 55, Los Angeles, 90053. That's Box 55, Los Angeles, 90053. Just ask for Peace Above the Storm. Our Canadian address, Box 2127, Oshawa, Ontario, L1H7V4. Or you can call us toll-free at 1-800-872-0055. That's 1-800-872-0055. And please remember to include the call letters of this station. Tomorrow's our final visit with Simon Peter. He and Lonnie will discuss Christ's mandate for him to, quote, feed my lambs. Join us, won't you?
Recently, I've been reading and listening to endless debates about taxes, specifically about the idea of a flat tax. At the heart of all this discussion is one big word, fair. How can you come up with a system that makes sure everyone pays his or her fair share? And in this discussion, guess what the word fair means? It means that everybody else has it at least as bad as I do. Fair means no one else gets any more breaks than I do. It seems that adult society has sunk to the spiritual and emotional level of 9-year-olds. Unfair is anything that doesn't advantage me. I wonder what would happen if 100 million plus Americans who consider themselves born again would take a Jesus approach to taxes. Jesus came to make it good for others. He announced, "I came not to be served, but to serve." And the Apostle Paul wrote, "Each of us should please his neighbor for his good, to build him up." What would happen if all 100 million Christians made it their first concern in tax reform to ease the burden on those who have less? What if we defined fair as what would be best for others? For the Voice of Prophecy, this is John McLarty.